An Osho Talk. Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt, number 9.
Kasan and Jo-san were going along, talking together, when Jo-san said, "If within life and death there were no Buddha, there would be no life and death." Kasan said, "If the Buddha were within life and death, there would be no delusion with regard to life and death." They argued back and forth, and there was no end to it. Finally, they decided to ask Dabai. Kasan said to him, "Of these two opinions, which is the more familiar?" Dabai said, "One is familiar, one is distant." "Which is the familiar one?" said Kasan. "Go away and ask me again tomorrow," responded Dabai. The next day, Kasan came again and asked. Dabai said, "A familiar one does not ask. One who asks is not familiar." Kasan afterwards said, "At that time, when I was with Dabai, I lost my Buddha eye." On another occasion, Hogen asked Haikyo, "Where is the dwelling place of the Buddha?" Haikyo answered, "No fixed place." Hogen objected, "If this is the absolute Buddha, how can it not be fixed, no special place?" Haikyo said, "If it were in a special place, it would not be the absolute Buddha." Hogen agreed. At another time, a monk said to Kosei, "What is the meaning of the Bhagavat in the 10 directions is one road to Nirvana?" Kosei said, "In a house there are not two masters."
Manisha. In a world full of insanity, you few are fortunate to discuss the great matter of inner journey. These anecdotes contain so much, although they are so small. It is almost like a dewdrop containing the whole ocean. In fact, it contains the whole ocean, because the same is the taste. These anecdotes are not to be heard only, but to be lived moment to moment. As I go in, you also go in yourself. These are strategies of Zen to bring the unaware to awareness. Kazan and Zozan were going along, talking together, when Zozan said, "If within life and death there were no Buddha, there would be no life and death." A perfect statement. If in life and in death there was no consciousness, no Buddhahood, there would be no life and death. It is absolutely and categorically true. Our birth is the birth of a Buddha, and our life is a life of a Buddha, whether we remember it or not, and our death is going to be the death of a Buddha. But remember, although on the screen it appears there is a beginning and there is an end, but existence has no framework. It is not a window. It is not enclosed by death and life. The Buddha within you just comes like a breeze from eternity and moves through your heart again into eternity. From the outside it may appear somebody is born, somebody is dead. From the inside, if you are aware, nothing is born, nobody dies. Only forms change, but the center of all our activities remains the same forever. To experience this center is the whole effort of all meditation. Because once you know it, you are relaxed. You cannot be miserable. Even if you try, you cannot be tense. You cannot be angry. You cannot be greedy. You cannot have a lust for power. Once knowing your own center, you reach to such heights from where even the clouds are far below. You have touched the blueness of empty space. This traveler is called by Kazan and Zozan the Buddha. Kazan said, if the Buddha were within life and death, there would be no delusion with regard to life and death. right, but not perfect. There is nothing wrong in it, but even to say there would be no delusion with regard to life and death is unnecessary. Awakening to your Buddhahood, all that is false disappears just like as you bring a lamp in a dark room. The darkness disappears. You don't say that the darkness has gone away because nothing goes. The darkness was never there, in fact. It was only an absence of light. The moment you bring light in, of course the absence of the light cannot remain. Nothing has gone out, only light has come in. As the Buddha is awakened within you, nothing disappears as delusion, as darkness, as hallucination. Your Buddha awake, and all around, infinity to infinity, there is only consciousness and nothing else. They argued back and forth, and there was no end to it. Finally, they decided to ask Dayabai, who was a great master. Kazan said to him, of these two opinions, which is the more familiar, more closer, more intimate, more approximate to the wordless experience? Dayabai said, one is familiar, one is distant. Which is the familiar one? Said Kazan. Go away and ask me again tomorrow. Responded Dayabai. The next day Kazan came again and asked. Dayabai said, a familiar one does not ask. One who asks is not familiar. What a great statement. You ask only because you don't know. You ask only because it is not your experience. The one who asks is not familiar with the truth. It is not. It is not his experience. He is just repeating sutras, scriptures. Where is the other one with whom you have been discussing? He has not come to us because he knows. Knowing brings a silence where no question arises, because question is another name of doubt. One who knows simply knows it is so. The other one has not come back to us. He must be familiar. He knows what is the point to harass the master. And because you have come, it shows you don't know. You are very distant. Kazan afterward said, at that time when I was with Dayabai, I lost my Buddha eye. What he means by this is that being with Dayabai, the master, I lost all my knowledge, all my intelligence, all my mind, I lost everything, including the Buddha eye. I used to think that I know. I used to think that I have got the Buddha eye. Buddha eye is the same expression as the third eye. Just a symbol of looking inwards. These two eyes open outwards. Just between these two eyes there is a point. When you look inwards, that point is symbolically called the third eye. Remember, it is only a metaphor. To be with a master, it is absolutely necessary to lose your mind. To be so innocent that no question arises. To be filled with wonder but not with knowledge. To be just a trust and a love, not a questionnaire. On another occasion, Hossein asked Akio, where is the dwelling place of the Buddha? Hayakuo answered, no fixed place. Hossein must have been a very intellectual person. He said, if this is the absolute Buddha, how can it not be fixed? No special place? Akyo said, if it were in a special place, it would not be the absolute Buddha. To be in a special place is to be imprisoned. To have an address is to be limited. To have a name is to be confined. And the very word Buddha means the unlimited, the unconfined, the overwhelming, the whole universe. He cannot have a special place. Hojin was not just an intellectual, because later on he himself became a great master. Listening to this, Hojin agreed. But it is still agreement. It is not realization. To agree with me is one thing. To experience with me is another. Agreement is of the mind. Experience is of the beyond, where I am no more and you are no more. Just a pure silence blossoms. Two awakened persons cannot be in the same room. For the simple reason, because two awakened consciousnesses will immediately merge into each other. At another time, a monk said to Kayosi, what is the meaning of the Bhagavat in the 10 directions is one road to Nirvana. You have to understand first the meaning of Bhagavad. You have called me Bhagwan. The word Bhagwan comes from Bhagavat. Bhagavat means the Blessed One. The Blissful One. And when somebody reaches to this blissfulness, the pure quality of being Bhagavat takes a form that form we have called in the East Bhagavan. It has nothing to do with God. Anybody who has translated Bhagavan as God is absolutely wrong. Bhagavan is concerned with Bhagavat. The infinite consciousness and you open up to the ultimate, immediately it pours into you. You are no more an ordinary human being. You have transcended. Your inside has become the inside of the whole existence. Now you are no more separate. You have found your roots. Otherwise, ordinarily, everybody is moving without roots. Not knowing from where the heart goes on receiving energy, not knowing who goes on breathing in you, not knowing the life juice that is running inside you. And the moment this life juice will go out, you will be left an empty cell, a corpse. It was not the body, it was not the mind, it was something transcendental to all duality. That is called Bhagavat. The Bhagavat in the 10 directions. Ordinarily, people talk about 4 directions. But then people became aware that between each 2 directions there is also a possibility of another direction. So north, south, east, west, these are commonplace accepted and agreed upon directions. Then 4 directions more between each 2 directions. 8 directions have been accepted by the philosophical people, but 10 directions include something more. Because one direction must go deeper, which is neither south nor north, which is not any out of the 8. And one direction should go upwards, vertical, that too is not included in the 8 directions. These 2 directions, the vertical height of the Everest and the depth of the Pacific, these 2 directions are in fact the spiritual directions. All 8 are geographical. These 2 have nothing to do with geography. They are your inner experiences of heights and depths, and they come together. By the side of each great mountain There is a great valley. The valley and the mountain are always together. Your inner being, when it opens, first it experiences two directions, the height, the depth, and then slowly, slowly, as this becomes your established situation, you start looking around, spreading into all other eight directions. The Bhagavat is the 10 directions. Still it is said, it is one road to Nirvana. It seems to Kayasi that there is a contradiction. One road and 10 directions? Obviously it is contradictory, but only for those who are only thinking about it. But for those who are experiencing, they know the road is one, that is of the height and the depth. And once you have attained to the point where your height and your depth meet, then you can look around to the very circumference of the universe, then your consciousness starts unfolding in all 10 directions, but the road has been won. Kayasi said, in a house, there are not two masters. There cannot be. You bring two nothingnesses and they will become one. Because what will be dividing them? There cannot be any fence between two nothingnesses. Between two zeros, how can you manage them as two? They will jump into each other and become one. The moment someone becomes enlightened, it is not that in the history of enlightenment one more enlightened person is added. He simply disappears in the ocean. Enlightenment simply means losing your number. Your personality, your ego, your I am, but simply becoming part of a tremendous isness. Kasan said to his monks, find me in the tips of 100 grasses. Recognize the prince in a noisy market. These were Kazan's last words before he died. But now you will not be able to find me here in this body. But don't be sad. Find me in the tips of 100 grasses. Just look silently and deeply, and you will find your master everywhere. The whole existence will become diffused with your master. And of course, the moment a master dies, he makes the whole existence sacred for the disciples. In the stones, they will touch him. In the flowers, they will see his colors. In the rainbows, they will see his beauty. A disciple becomes so much deeply immersed in the consciousness of the master that then when master's consciousness spreads all over existence, the disciple at least can see that's why in Zen, when a master dies, disciples dance, make a ceremony of it, because their master is freed from all boundaries of body, mind. This freedom of their master is an indication of their own freedom. This freedom has to be respected, recognized through your ceremony, through your songs and dances. Manisha has asked one question. Our lives here around you and that of people outside in the world could hardly be more disparate. Our silence, their insanity. What is the connection between what is happening in here and out there? Manisha, the difference is very small, almost negligible. Those who are outside are sleeping Buddhas. Those who are inside are just awakening. Outside is night and people are fast Asleep is snoring. Here in this moment of death, silence, you are awake, this is the only difference. What is the difference in the night when you go to sleep and in the morning when you wake up? Exactly the same difference. They are not inferior who are outside, and you are not superior because you are inside. Just they have decided to sleep a little more, and you are fed up with sleep and you want to wake up. It is everybody's choice. As far as the Buddha is concerned, he will eternally wait for you. Whenever you choose to open your eyes inwards, you will find him. He is there in your sleep, in your dreams, in your sanity, in your insanity. He is your very life. So even in the insane person, there is as much Buddhahood as in the awakened, enlightened. The quantity, the quality, both are the same. The only small difference is one has recognized oneself, one is postponing. But this is not to condemn the outsiders as sinners, what religions have always done. Condemnation in itself is a non-religious attitude. Neither anyone is a sinner nor a saint. Only few people are asleep and few are awake. The people who are asleep, they have their joys, their dreams, their nightmares. The people who are awake, they have their blessings, their ecstasies. Any awakened person cannot condemn the sleeping one. He can only be compassionate. Because of this very point, I say unto you that all your religions have been committing a great sin of condemning people. I cannot condemn anyone. Because I know who you are, whether you are asleep or awake, that is your business. But I know that whatever is within me, the same conscious greatness is vibrating within you. What does it matter if you are asleep and drinking tea and smoking cigarettes? These stupid things cannot destroy your Buddhahood. And that's what religions have been doing. Don't do this, don't do that. And the people who are saying this are simply quoting scriptures. It is not their own experience. The man of experience forgets completely the desire to condemn. His compassion is great. His love is infinite. And he knows that we are creatures of eternity. So what does it matter? There are only 7 days in the week. Somebody decides to wake up on Monday, and somebody decides to wake up on Sunday. More than that, there is no difference. In my vision, these are the only two classes. Few people sleeping, few people awake. But basically, they are constituted of the same stuff we call Buddhahood. And everybody is free to continue to sleep or to wake up. The master at the most functions at the bedside like an alarm clock. It is not your condemnation, just reminding you that it is time. It is morning. If you want to take another turn and pull your blanket over, it is up to you. The clock is completely unconcerned. It has done its work. It has made you aware that it is morning and time to get up. But you are free. If you want to get up late today, perhaps the last night's party's hangover, so what? Just don't snore. Sleeping is okay, but snoring is absolutely interfering with other sleepers. One strange event happened. One night I was in a train, in the compartment there were 4 sleeping berths. I could not believe that those 3 persons looked very alike. Later on, I came to know that they are all twins. And there is Snorri. I tried hard to forget that the whole world is Maya, illusion. But their snoring was such that no philosophy was of any help. They snored in such harmony. First one will snore, two will remain silent, then the second will give the answer more loudly, then the third will come in, and the round will go on. And I was caught in the middle. In the middle of the night, when I became fed up with that music, I had to do something. I started snoring fully awake. I woke up all the three fellows. They came down and looked at me, because my eyes was open, so they were even more afraid. They said, "What is the matter? You are awake and you are snoring so loudly." I said, "If you don't stop your snoring, I am going to do this exercise whole night." They said, "At least please close your eyes." Because that makes the heart tremble. I said, "Then learn the lesson. I have been waiting for hours. Stop this symphony." They said, "What we can do? We are all twin brothers. So whatever one does, the other does. Our all habits are similar. Snoring too. We are helpless." I said, "Then remember, I will snore so loudly with open eyes that neither you will be able to sleep nor the neighboring compartment." They said, "Better we should wake up and read something. You do whatever you want, but please, don't do two things together, snoring and open eyes. Either close your eyes and snore. We are accustomed of it. Or if you don't want to snore, you can open your eyes and do anything, whatever you want. We will try our best not to snore, but do you understand our helplessness? In sleep, one tends to forget all about his decisions." I said, "I know. But I am tired. have been traveling for 24 hours in this train, you have just entered. Then sit down and read something. I supplied them books that these are the books you read. And let me sleep. And remember, if anybody snores, I'm going to be even nasty things. This was just a sample. Those poor fellows whole night has to read books which they did not understand what they are all about. In the morning when I woke up, I said, now you can sleep, I am going to the bathroom. Snore as much as you can, the full quota, condensed. So while I am taking my bath, I will take as long time as possible. Rejoice your snoring. But there is no condemnation in it. I enjoyed it immensely. It was tiring, but it was hilarious too. Manisha, never fall in the trap of the old religious approach. They have always condemned people for such small things. And still talk about compassion. And the people who are doing a small thing are just doing because they are unconscious of their own self. And they are tired, utterly bored. Out of their boredom, somebody becomes alcoholic. Out of boredom, somebody starts taking drugs. Out of boredom, people commit suicide. But they all need the compassion of those who are aware and alert. This is a place to be conscious, and with consciousness comes compassion, never condemnation. Out of you, the whole world should be showered with love, rain all over the world. Perhaps your joy, your dance, your consciousness may provoke the same in the sleeping ones. And it is a great joy to wake up a Buddha. I am having immense joy in waking you all up. To my last breath, I am going to continue harassing you. What do you think all these discourses are? Just sheer harassment. Before I begin the harassment, few laughters so that anybody who is asleep wakes up. Laughter is simply a strategy, because when everybody is laughing, you cannot sleep. 7,000 people laughing, it will be a miracle if you can sleep. Kowalski is sitting around the kitchen reading the newspaper. His wife, Olga, is getting very bored and frustrated. "Hey, Kowalski," says Olga, "will you take me to the zoo?" "No, sweetheart," Kowalski replies, "anyone who wants to see you can come here." Gorgeous Gloria comes to see Dr. Qualler. "Every time I sneeze," says Gloria, "I have an orgasm." "Really?" says Dr. Qualler. "What do you take for it?" Gloria smiles at the doctor and says, "Pepper." Mr. Smith is not well at all. So he goes to Dr. Bones for some tests. The next day his wife comes in to pick up the results. But Bones is looking worried. "I am afraid, Mrs. Smith, there has been a mix-up," says Bones. "I had two Mr. Smiths in here for tests yesterday. One who has total loss of memory and one who has AIDS, and I don't know which test belongs to your husband." "My God," cries Mrs. Smith, "how can I find out?" "Simple," says Bones. "Send your husband out for a walk. And if he comes back, don't fuck him." Olga Kowalski goes to the doctor in desperation. "You have got to help me." "Doctor," she cries, "I have got 12 children and I just can't stand the thought of looking after any more of those little monsters. What can I do?" "Well," says the doctor, "have you ever tried contraceptives?" "I can't do that," says Olga. "My husband is a strict Catholic. But if I have any more kids to look after, I will go nuts." "Okay," says doctor, "I have been experimenting with a new method. It is not 100% safe, But you can try it if you like. Anything, cries Olga, I will do anything. So the doctor takes out Olga's womb and implants a monkey's womb. The operation is a success, and the doctor tells Olga to come back for a checkup in a few months. When Olga comes back, the doctor asks, how is everything going? Just great. Olga replies, they come out, hop onto a tree, and off they go. Now, this is the right time, Nivedana. Close your eyes and feel your body to be frozen so that you can concentrate your life energy, your consciousness within yourself. With this silence, you enter into a different dimension. The dimension of your within. It is a vast opening into inner sky. Open your wings without any fear, because you cannot meet on this way anyone else than yourself. Blessed is this evening. So many Buddhas, and they have all disappeared into one consciousness. In this Buddha hall, there are no more 7,000 people, but a single silence, a single blissfulness, a single Buddhahood. To make it more clear and more deeper Nivedana relax, let go of the body as if you are dead, so that life energy can concentrate totally at the center. This is the source, the beginning and the end. In this silence, thousands of roses have blossomed. In this silence, thousands of lotuses have opened their leaves. To go on deepening inwards, you will find the immortal element that passes from body to body, form to form, but is in itself eternal. Nivedana, come back, sit down for a few moments, remembering the experience because this experience has to become an undercurrent for 24 hours, day in, day out. Then there is no birth and no death. You have found the traveler, the eternal pilgrim. Religion is basically concerned with this, not with any church or temple or mosque or synagogue. It is concerned with your awakening to your ultimate potential. It makes you a joyful, compassionate, loving, relishing your freedom and never interfering into anybody else's freedom. This will give you your dignity, And this will also give you a tremendous feeling of gratitude towards the whole. Can we celebrate the meeting of so many Buddhas?